My name is Bailey Brierly. I'm 18 years old. Today is March 28th, 2018, and I'm speaking with Elizabeth Kilborn, who is my aunt, and we are recording this interview in Daphne, Alabama, in her computer room. So, you're a retired school teacher?
I am.
Okay. And how long did you do that?
About 27 years.
Okay. Have you had any other jobs?
No.
I'm going to start with the questions that I thought were the most interesting.
Okay.
So, what was your worst job experience?
I actually taught in Mobile County for 8 years, and I had been teaching in the public schools there for about 3 or 4 years, so I was a fairly young teacher. And at that time, we had desks, old-fashioned desks in our room, and I had reported one of my parents for suspected child abuse. And I was sitting at my desk. The children had been dismissed for the day. I was sitting in my room, and this woman opened the door and started screaming at me. And I very calmly said, by law, I had to report you. And she picked up one of the desks and threw it at me. And then,
Wait, she picked up the whole desk?
and threw it at me. And but she was at the door, and I was on the other side of the room, is where my desk was. So it just hit some of the other desks. And at that age, I don't know how I had the presence of mind, but I calmly said that if she did not leave, that I would file charges against her. And the bluff worked, and she left.
Dang. How old were you?
I was probably maybe 25.
Dang.
I had not been teaching that long. So that was rather scary. Another time when I was teaching in Texas, I believe it was a custody battle, and I had the student in my room. And I heard from down the hall, it was at the end of the day, I heard someone screaming, a man screaming this child's name out. And I quietly told the little boy, I said, "Go in this closet and don't come out until, and don't make a sound until I tell you it's okay." And the man was coming, his father was coming down the hall, going room by room, screaming the child's name and slamming the doors. And I just sat there, and he went, he looked in the room, he slammed the door, and he kept going. And by that time, of course, the authorities had been called and whatever, and they escorted him away. And after, it seemed like forever, but finally I went to the closet because no one knew where the child was, literally. I was the only one that knew where the child was hiding. And I opened the door, and he came out, and we talked about it, and somebody took him home. And that was a long time ago.
That just made me think about, like, you don't, like, being a teacher is not just teaching kids, it's like taking care of their well-being, like, all around,
Well,
even
you
in,
feel a responsibility.
yeah.
You're not told that, or I was not told that when I was in college, that your job is to teach and to definitely protect your students. It just comes naturally that like in the recent shootings, the teachers that protected are the ones who went toward the gunfire. It's just instinct.
Going back to college, how long did you know that this was something you wanted to do, or did it take a while to finally decide?
Well, I really never liked school. I went to a Catholic school from kindergarten through high school. There were so many rules, and the nuns were very strict, and it just didn't seem fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just something. I mean, I had friends and enjoyed my friends, but it was really rote memory. Everything was to be memorized, and you didn't sit down and have a real discussion about anything. And I mean, here are the facts, and you just took the facts and you took them home, and then you came back and took a test and just wrote out. And so I just wasn't really fun. I mean, I had fun doing extra things, you know, with mm-hmm. my friends, but as far as learning, it wasn't fun. But when I went to college, I didn't declare my major right off. But the teachers at South Alabama made learning fun and interesting. And it was discussion, and it was projects, and it was hands-on, and it was just a lot of fun. And I thought, you know, this is the way you're supposed to teach, so that people want to come to class and they want to learn.
Was there any, do you remember of any teacher or class in particular? That really
English
inspired
class.
You?
English class was, it was literature.
Mm.
And it was very interesting. It was American literature. And then I had another teacher that just did children's literature. And she was a very, very good teacher. And the only thing that I regret is the woman could not stand Dr. Seuss. And she never would discuss the Dr. Seuss books, and they're so popular. And even today, I still don't like Dr. Seuss, and I never watched the movie or anything. And I never bought my grandchild or great-grandchild a Dr. Seuss book.
I actually never really liked him that much either, so I'm going to move this closer to you, by the way.
Okay.
But, let's see. This is another fun question. Who was the worst person you worked for? Or best? Or, like, best or worst school, or...
The best principal I had was in Mobile, probably the best, I would say, one of the best that I had, Elsie Collier, and I believe there might be a school named after her now. She was tough as nails and absolutely fantastic. And another, a real good principal I had was in Texas, in Rusk, Texas. She was excellent.
So where all have you taught and worked? And like, how many schools have you worked in?
Oh, goodness. Not that many. In Mobile, I taught just 1 year for the Catholic school district. And I had 45 kids, fourth and fifth grade, in one room. And no help. But it was fun. And I was the only lay person there. It was a
really?
Little, really tiny little school in Chickasaw.
When was this?
In 1973.
Okay.
And then the next year, I went into the public school system. And I taught actually at the school where I did my student teaching and across the hall from my college mentor. And then I moved to Texas and taught in several different schools in South Texas and then in East Texas. And then my last job was in Rusk, Texas, and it's an excellent school system, way ahead of its time as far as computers, and when no one else had, every classroom had a computer. I was a reading specialist, so I had like 6 computers to work with the students.
So, in the classroom, what exactly
did you do, like, what were the techniques and stuff that you used to teach kids reading? Like, I've always been kind of curious, like, how do you teach someone how to...
Well, you can teach them phonetically by sound, or you can do sight reading. So that's the way I work both ways, because everybody doesn't learn to read the same way. And these, the kids that I had were older, so they should have already been good readers mm-hmm. when they got to, like, fourth grade. They should have been good readers by then. But some of them had just been put down, I think, so much. And that's another thing that happens to, or at least at that time happened to, some children. They were put down because they didn't, they maybe stuttered, or they were not fast readers, and the other kids made fun of them because they took so long to get through a sentence or a paragraph or whatever. And so they just felt defeated. And so when the time I got to them and I had a reading lab, we just did things at everybody's own pace. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of the computers in there, but mostly we worked one-on-one. And the other students would be doing other things, and I would be working with one student, and we would discuss a book. I mean, it might take a long time, where it would take an average student maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes to read a book. It might take my little group maybe 2 or 3 days to get through it. And the whole point was to build confidence and not put the student down, but always make them feel that they can do anything. They can learn to read. They can be a good reader. And a lot of the parents, not a lot, but some of the parents couldn't read. So they couldn't help the student. And I gave away a lot of books because they would like pick a book, and they didn't have books at home. So I would let them take the book home so that they could, you know, open up their world and learn, you know, this is a book, and you can go anywhere if you have mm-hmm. a book.
Yeah, I was, we did this thing in my sorority recently. It was like a privilege thing where you, say if you had over 50 books in your house when you were growing up, you'd take a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't, then you would stay in place. I mean, and almost everyone stepped forward, but, like, it's weird to think that a lot of people don't have that access. And, like, because I went to, you know, private school in my life, it's like, everyone kind of, you would assume that everyone kind of already had that access. But it's weird to think about nowadays, or just within the past 50 years, a lot of people didn't have that access, and a lot of people, don't have that many books. And like, so, and like, when you're a student, you don't really see that amongst your own classmates, but when you're a teacher, you kind of can pick it out, and I always thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, was it surprising how many kids didn't have that access? Like, what was your take on that?
Extremely surprised. I mean, I came from, you know, a family that had, you know, a brother and a sister, a dad that was an attorney, a stay-at-home mom, and we had a library in our house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from the floor to the ceiling was books. And we always had interesting magazines that we could read. And going from that little world out into, I guess, the real world, when you just expect all these kids to have what you had growing up, and to realize the poverty,
mm-hmm.
and there were some, you know, children that were not poor, you know, average middle class, and some even above that, you know, all different walks of life that I taught, but some had nothing. You know, they didn't have a book in their house,
mm-hmm.
and some had their own little, in their room, they had their own little library, their own little bookcase with their own little books and everything, and some had nothing. It was a shock.
But yeah, there was also another StoryCorps interview where it was someone who grew up without access to books, and she was just talking about how like life-changing it was to for one of her teachers to hand her a book and help her have that confidence. And it's interesting to hear how for a lot of the students it wasn't skill that they were lacking, it was confidence, and that's why they couldn't read. But
confidence is probably more than half.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you want to go into anything, you have to have somebody encouraging you to give you the confidence so you can move on
yeah.
in any whatever you want to be.
You were saying earlier that, well, before I go into that, I wanted to ask, would you consider your job that you had as a calling? Or as a career or a job. So was it something that you just did every day because you got money and you didn't want to, it was okay? If you had another chance, you wouldn't do it again? Or was it more of a career where you saw yourself, you know, advancing in it? Or was it just a calling or something you felt was something that you were called to do?
Yeah, I think it has to be a calling because teachers, even nowadays, don't make any money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not about money.
Yeah. Like even but, when you were growing up, it's still.
I really, you know, it was just something that I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't even know it. You know, I didn't know it, you know, anything about finances or whatever. And I think the first year I taught in the Catholic system, I think my entire paycheck for the entire 9 months that I taught was $10,000. That's what I got. And I thought, I better get into the public school system here because this isn't working out too well.
So,
but I mean, if you're looking to make money,
yeah.
you're going the wrong way. Even in college, I mean, there's so many things that you can go into now. I mean, it's just endless. That not only would they be enjoyable, but you would make a good salary. You know, it's not all about money, but nowadays you have to make enough to, you know, support yourself. And if you have a family, you've got to support them. You have all kinds of bills and insurance. You've got to consider all that.
Yeah. So you always hear how teacher salaries are just ridiculously low. Has it always been like that, or has it been like a steady decrease, do you think? From
I
your
think
perspective,
it's always been low.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't make that much now.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider other professions, mm-mm.
And you were saying earlier you wouldn't recommend going into the same field for someone else to go into teaching. So what was your reasoning for that?
Different reasons. Years ago, teachers were looked up to and respected. That was number one. And in the community, they were respected. Nowadays, they are not respected,
mm-hmm.
is what I can see. And the little bit, you know, that I know about it, since I'm not in the profession anymore. And the violence and the drugs. That's always been there. It just didn't happen in the last 10 or 15 years and all the shootings and the violence and the drugs and the abuse have always been there, but I think they were swept under the carpet,
mm-hmm.
and now they're out in the open, and I just think it's just too violent now. I can't imagine, for example, the woman that picked up the chair.
Yeah.
I mean, the desk and threw it at me. Nowadays, somehow, if she got into the room, she would have just pulled out a gun.
Yeah.
And back then, I wasn't afraid to go to work. I mean, I loved my work. But nowadays, And we always had security in place, even way back. Mm-hmm. And the last school district I taught in, we had really great security. But I think I would be probably afraid now. Because you just don't know. You could be, of course, that's true in any profession. It, you know, you're not safe. But I think in that, I just don't, you don't have a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have a lot of parents involved in a lot of situations. And the last school district I taught in is a fantastic school district, but in that one tiny little East Texas town, it had two prisons and the state mental asylum. So a lot of these kids, their parents were in the prison,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't know their parents. And they would come up and just quietly tell you, well, you'll have to speak to my grandmother because she's bringing me up.
Yeah.
Or I'm living with my aunt now. Because there were no parents, you know, and so that's who you had to talk to.
You said something earlier that interested me, where you said that teachers don't have the respect that they do nowadays, or that they did before. Do you mean respect from the students, or from parents, or from society as a whole, like all of it? Did you notice that when you were working, like a less and less respect, or how do you...
Just in some situations, and it depends on how the child was brought up,
mm-hmm.
because this, you have to remember, this was a long time ago. I mean, I haven't taught in 10 years, so I don't know right now. It just doesn't seem that... People, they used to really respect their teacher,
mm-hmm.
and they would never think about, you know, harming them or whatever. Now, like the person that threw the desk, that was, you know, she was already in big trouble before she ever threw the desk. But I don't think that parents today teach their children to respect their peers or their teachers or law enforcement, anyone that's in control.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they would act the way they do if they had that respect.
Yeah. I kind of see where you're coming from. I mean, going to the school I went to, it was, people generally had a lot of respect for their teachers, but I've heard a lot from people who went to other schools and just seeing the kids, you know, at my own school. It's like, I just don't understand how some people are raised sometimes.
Do you think that's true in college, where you're going now, that there's some students that are not respectful of the professors?
There are some. I feel like generally people are more mature.
Mm-hmm.
I think it may just be where I go to school. But I think it's more of a high school and elementary school thing. You have to be there whether you want to be or not.
Mm-hmm.
In college, you can always drop out. So you generally have more motivation. Check how much time we have. Okay, we've got 20 minutes remaining. Let me see some other questions. So how long have you been teaching overall?
About 25 years.
Okay.
25 or 27, I can't really remember.
Let's see. I like this one. Can you tell me about the dumbest thing you ever did in your life?
With teaching?
It doesn't have to be with you, too.
Oh, goodness. I don't think we have enough time for that. I can tell you something that was really dumb that I did when I was teaching. There were three of us that were doing a science experiment together, okay? It was to launch a hot air balloon, just a little, you know, small one. And my only job was to hold the bucket of water, and if anything went wrong, anything even looked like it was going to be on fire, I was to dump the water on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other two teachers were fooling with this. I don't remember now. It's been so long ago. But something, the balloon, because it was made out of paper. They had it rigged. We had it rigged some way. I can't remember for science. It was supposed to rise and whatever. Well, it started to rise, but then it caught on fire. And my job was supposed to be to dump the water on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I panicked. And when I panicked, I ran with the bucket from one end of the building, we were outside, of course, to the other, and they were all screaming my name to come back. And one of the teachers, oh, she was so mad at me because it only rose just maybe six, maybe no, wasn't that high, maybe 4 or 5 feet, and her hair got singed. And then when the thing caught on fire, it blew and went toward the superintendent's office, and they were all screaming. Well, when I realized that there wasn't anything to, it's safe to go back, I just walked back, you know, my little bucket of water. Well, what was left in it, because I had been running before with the bucket of water. They were, what are you doing? You were supposed to put the fire out. I'm sorry, I panicked. You're never going to get a job like that again. You're never going to be in charge of putting out the fire. Look at my hair. And it was singed on me, and not all of it, but it had kind of a crunchiness to the edges of it. Yeah, I've done a lot of dumb things in my life, so many things. I couldn't even name them all. But in teaching, that was a big one. And I said, well, I just hope it goes out before it comes down and lands at the superintendent's office, because they're going to point the finger at me that it was my fault because I didn't put the fire out.
So, what was the thing that you primarily taught? In English, wasn't it?
Breeding.
Breeding.
And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, the last 10 years, I taught what they call GT, that's what they call it, gifted and talented. In Texas here, it's called honors.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught them one day, and then the other 4 days, I taught the children that were struggling with reading. So it was opposite ends of the spectrum. But the kids, you know, there's a fine line between genius, and it's funny because the kids that would come in would see all these projects and things that the other kids had done, you know, and they would sit there and instead of doing reading that day, we would discuss what we were doing in the other class, and they were so interested in it, and they completely understood it. I explained it all, and, you know. But it was hard to teach the gifted and talented students, because they were really, really smart.
What ages did you teach mostly?
Mostly fourth grade. I started out in third and most fourth. And then one summer in Mobile, I taught summer school, middle school. That was awful. Awful age group. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And then when I was in East Texas, the special ed director begged me to teach high school special ed while the teacher went to Europe
mm-hmm.
for, what was
said, 4 weeks, it seemed like 400 years. Well, she went off. I said, well, I really, that's high school. I really don't want to do it, but he begged. So I said, okay, I'll do it just for a short time. She left me no plans, nothing. And I walked in that room, and every kid except for one were taller than me. And I'm like,
you're pretty tall.
I am. I'm 5'7". They were all taller and bigger. And I thought, uh-oh, this is not going well. Mm-mm. And I just had to wing it. I went to another teacher on the hall that taught the special ed, and that's a whole different ball game. And high school, that's another story. They all had an attitude. Mm-hmm. They all, So I just had to devise my own plans and what we were going to do. So I just did what I'd always done, and we worked on reading. And while I was there, on my watch, one of my students did bring a gun to school.
Oh.
But he was caught and arrested before he ever got in the building. I don't know what his problem was. And the only female student in the class, she ended up getting pregnant. And I said, I'm not responsible for any of this. I'm just doing my job. And the last day of school, of that teaching those high school students, I think that was the happiest day of my teaching career. I was counting down on the calendar, how many days do I have to do this?
How long was it to begin with?
It was only supposed to be for 4 weeks. She went to Europe for 4 weeks. And I taught that class for 4 weeks. It was the longest 4 weeks of my life. It was just, kind of makes me cringe thinking about it, having to go back in there.
So you don't like teaching high school?
Nope, or middle school. I don't have that kind of patience. I have a lot of patience with children, but not the one with the attitude and the raging hormones and everything. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh no. Mm-mm.
I don't even like looking at middle schoolers. It just gives me bad memories. And like looking back, my poor teacher, they put up with so much. But because I was earlier, you were talking about doing, it was a science experiment with the hot air balloon. Did the schools, did you have, because when I was in fourth grade, we had like one teacher that taught everything.
When I was in Alabama, we had one teacher taught everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started teaching, we didn't have a PE teacher. We didn't have anything. So we would just take turns taking different classes out for, like one day, myself and another teacher, like across the hall, we'd go out with our kids. And I had a whole little decoupage box of games that my PE instructor in college had gotten us to do. And they had, I don't know how many, probably 100 different games. And that came in so handy. I kept it on my desk, and if we were going to go out and play a game, I made sure I let them pick which game.
Oh, that's cool.
And then we go out and play that game. And if it was something where you had to have, say a parachute or something, or you had to have balls or whatever, we had access to that, so we could go out. And we played out there with the kids. We didn't just stand on the side and watch them. We actually went out there, like we took our sneakers and, played with the kids and enjoyed the kids. And, we just had a lot of fun with them.
I've actually never had a teacher to do that. That would have been cool. They usually just sat on the bench while we ran around and did whatever.
Yeah, we always went out. And later, of course, we had coaches, that took the kids out and everything.
Yeah.
But, some days I'd just go out there with them and, be like a cheerleader on the side if they were playing a game or whatever. And the kids really appreciate that.
Yeah.
that you care enough to give up, because that's the only free time you had.
Yeah.
You know, you had your lunch period, and then you had a 45-minute period in the afternoon or morning, whenever your break was, and then you didn't have another break. So, you know, I would go for maybe 15 minutes, and I'd still have 30 minutes left to get my class organized or whatever.
Yeah, that's really cool. I never, all my teachers are pretty lame. And my coaches even, do five jumping jacks and do whatever. But I really like the idea of the pot.
Kids are fun to be around because they're funny.
Yeah.
They will come up and say anything. And if anything's out of place, if your hair is messed up, you're having a really bad hair day, they'll say, "What happened to your hair?" They have, I slept wrong or whatever. And they'll just ask anything. Oh, what is that on your face? And I have a scar right here on my face that I have had since I was 2. And while you're reading and they're like sitting on the floor around you and you're reading, or you're sitting on the floor with them and they're gathered around you, and you'll feel this little finger tap you, and so you stop, and you know you're in a really good book or something, it's exciting and you're doing voices and having fun, and say, "What happened to your face?" And it's like, "What do you mean, what happened to my face?" Right there, you know, they put their little finger, "Well, I had, I tripped with a cup in my hand when I was real little. Did it hurt? Well, I really don't remember. I was only 2. Okay, then we'll get back to the book." You know, it has nothing to do with the book. Or one time I'll never forget, when I first started teaching, I was sitting on the floor with the kids and reading, and we were all sitting there, and all of a sudden I felt somebody petting my arm, and you know, I kept going a few minutes, and then I finally, I just said, "You know, is something wrong?" And this little boy said, "You have hair on your arms." "Oh, okay." "Okay, your mommy and daddy don't have hair on their arm?" "I don't know, but I can see that, and it feels, I can feel it." "Okay, you know, and we're going back." "It's okay, can we go back to the story?" "Oh, okay, we'll go back to the story now." Okay. I mean, it's kind of unnerving when you're sitting there and you're really trying to, you know, do voices with the characters and everything, and all of a sudden you feel this hand, you know, just, or sometime, I remember another time I was sitting in a chair and I had on, pantyhose, and I felt something rubbing my leg, and I thought, "What?" And you know, I stopped and I looked down, and he just rubbing my leg, and he looked up and he just big old grin, and I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I just wanted to see what that felt like." I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "That's called hose, pantyhose, and ladies wear pantyhose sometime." And he said, "What's it made out of?" "Well, I'm not really sure. You know, we'll have to look that up." "Okay, we'll get back to the book now." Just crazy things kids do like that. It just makes it a lot of fun to teach.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be able to do that. I think it's kind of admirable to have patience like that.
It's funny, I have patience with children, but I have no patience with adults. None.
Oh, that's understandable.
I mean, I don't know.
Okay, we've only got 5 minutes left. Okay. You can stop here if you want.
Any more questions on your topic?
Well, there's a question. It's kind of like a wrapping up question.
Oh, okay.
Just what do you think you've learned from everything? From your experience as a teacher, is there anything that's really stuck with you?
I think the biggest shock was that, or is that, I never realized, because I lived in my own little world growing up, a little cubicle, that there's so much going on
that you never know, and you have to listen very carefully, and you have to let kids talk, because you won't find out what's really going on when you can feel it, or you watch them and you know something's wrong. And you have to be able to listen to them, and you have to let them express their feelings and tell you that if you get them to feel you're somebody they can trust, you'll find out what's wrong, what's going on. If it's abuse or it's a problem at home, if it's mm-hmm. family problems, you'll find out. But the poverty that you never knew existed, the kids that were hungry, so many times I would put food in their backpacks so they'd have something to take home with them on the weekend. Because
mm-hmm.
I knew there was no food at home. And there's so much going on that you never realize. When you look at the student next to you, you don't know what their life is really like. There's a lot of, and nowadays with drugs and abuse and a lot more violence, I think. I don't know that, but it just seems, mm-hmm. maybe it's because it's more public now. I'm sure it was always there, but
yeah.
It wasn't on social media and on the TV and everything else constantly.
Yeah.
And I think it made me wake up to the real world, because
mm-hmm.
I always was in a little bubble, and that's not how the world is set up. There are people, there are kids, young adults, older people that are having a lot of problems because of whatever reason, not just drugs and alcohol, but violence. And I think it would be very hard to go back into teaching now because of all of that.
Well, thank you for talking to me and helping me with this. It's been very interesting.